Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football, presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. We are 67 days away from kickoff, so tell us where, or first, tell us who your favorite number 67 is. Let's start there, and then tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking. Get your questions in. We're going to get to as many of those as we can here in just a little bit. But let's start with the commitment. Some good news yesterday for the Longhorns guys as they get a commitment. Tell folks about that.
Yeah, and by the way, I have to start with this. Bobby Burton sent a text last night to a group that said, "Boy, the Aggies struggle with orange." I guess that's true. whatever shade it is, it's a little bit of a struggle, but got really close to the first meaningful national championship ever, or since ever. So, yeah, big John Mills commits to Texas, all 6'5 and a half, 340 pounds of him on his official visit 2 weeks ago. This was expected. We've been telling you that Texas had a lead over Washington for some time. Some people tried to throw Florida into the mix, but that wasn't going to happen. It was Texas or Washington pretty much the whole way. He made official visits to Nebraska, Cal, and Florida. But once the Michigan coaching change happened, those were the top three for a long time. Was Washington because he had four family members that were athletes there. Texas, which Kyle Flood got him on him early. It reminded me of the Jaden Chapman recruitment that Kyle Flood – Washington was the first school, obviously, on him. But Kyle Flood got him early, very early. So he got a kid from San Francisco to campus four times. I mean, that's a strong relationship and strong recruiting by Kyle Flood. Bobby, the question was asked on OnTexasFootball.com, but is this the first guy from San Francisco to commit to Texas in football? I can't think of another.
Well, I mean, certainly Northern California is a rarity. Northern California is a rarity. I'd have to go back and ask an old-timer if they remember one, because I certainly don't, not at this time, Jerry, to be honest with you. But look, I'm looking at it a little bit differently. Texas now has four offensive linemen committed. Right. The average height and weight of those guys, just to ask you if what Kyle Flood likes, whether they're from San Francisco or Cedar Hill or Port Neches, he likes size. Average 6'5", 330 pounds.
Yeah.
Out of those four guys. I mean, Texas now at 12 commitments on the recruiting campaign. Longhorns have some work to do. I mean, Jerry and I were plotting it out along with a CJ Vogel off air yesterday. I mean, look, there could be 10 to 15 announcements of note in the next 2 weeks.
For sure.
Josiah Sharma from another Northern California kid out of Folsom, California. I guess he may be a little bit more central, but he literally is going to announce this coming Friday. And there's a case to be made that he's one of the more important recruitments for the Longhorns in this cycle, the defensive tackle that's looking at both Oregon and Alabama, as well as the Longhorns. Then you have guys like Smith Orogbo and Marco Jones at Edge that are making announcements. There's half a dozen others. We think Cade Phillips and Aiden Anding are getting ready to make their decisions. Just name after name after name right now, Jerry, are getting ready to do that. Yes, there are some that we think are going to hold off, like DeCorian Moore, like Jamie French. But by and large, it feels right now like there could be 10 to 15 dominoes start falling here in the next week to 10 days.
That's sure. And obviously, Josiah Sharma is a big one, and not just 6'4", 315, 320, but he reminds me of Sean Rogers. And I know I'm out there on record, but that's what we do here. He reminds me of that Sean Rogers upside player with that frame, with that explosive quickness for a big guy, with some twitch for a big guy combined with a frame that's going to be 330 pounds. Jason Hablinski asks, Sharma better than Zion? Yeah, for me, he is. I think Zion's strictly an over-the-ball player at the next level. I think Josiah Sharma is a big-time player, guys. I call him a four. I call guys four-star pluses who I think are top 150 level player prospects in the country for me. He's a four-star plus for me. I really think so, and that's going to be Texas, Oregon, or Alabama. I mean, it's one of the three. Alabama got the last word last weekend. He's got to tell the longest-standing relationship, Courtney Morgan and Kalen DeBoer, no, if he's going to go elsewhere. But I think Texas has done a good job on that recruitment.
All right. Is there anything else in recruiting that fans should be aware of at the moment?
Yeah, so look, I think that Bobby did a good job of laying that out. Your decisions, kind of some dates coming up for some guys. Smith Orogbo is July 1st, the edge out of Hastings. Marco Jones, and Smith Orogbo, I think, is Oklahoma, Texas, Texas Tech. Marco Jones, the D lineman, the edge out of San Ramon, Danville, San Ramon area in California. He is July 2nd. That's Texas, Michigan, USC. Then you have Nick Townsend on July 8th. Same date Tanook Hines announces. We'll see what kind of push Texas makes there. Kalik Lockett, I think, will be the first of the three guys that everybody asks about at receiver. DeCorian Moore, Jamie French, who's locked in for an August 30 decision. I think DeCorian Moore will be, you know, late July, early August, kind of on that similar timeline at Colin Simmons, but prior to the start of high school and senior season. But Kalik Lockett could do something by mid-July. So I don't think that one will string out as long. I think that family kind of wants to get it behind them. So that'll be interesting. The timing of all this is so important and so key. I think Brandon Brown, obviously Texas commitments, spoke with somebody close to that one this morning before the show. Had a really good visit to Oklahoma, better than they thought. I mean, that's the official visit process, right? These schools, these blue bloods, they do a great job at the visits. I still think Texas or LSU. I know Rodney Garner's trying at Tennessee. Obviously, Brent Venables, Todd Bates are trying at Oklahoma. But I really think Texas or LSU is what this one still is going to come down to. I think he'll have a final decision. Yes, he's committed, but when you're taking visits, you have to come to a final decision. I think that'll probably be early, mid-July as well. So many Myron Charles should be a mid-July. I mean, so many of these guys are coming up here, like Bobby said, Cade Phillips, Nathan Tillman, Aiden Annings this weekend at some point coming up. So many of these decisions are going to happen. Now, some guys who are going to hold off later, we talked about the wide receivers. Nick Brooks, I think, is a August, September. Michael Fasusi's around August 22nd, 23rd. We don't know on Lamont Rogers. So there's going to be a few guys that take it out into right around the start of the season or first couple of weeks in the season. It may be an important date for them or for their family or things such as that.
Hey, Jerry, I got a couple more because I was kind of checking them off as you were talking about them. A couple more dates. Nick Townsend and Tanook Hines, we think July 8th.
Somebody's saying July 10th. That one's moving around based on where they can – do a live stream commitment. People are having to move these dates around a little bit for these announcements in July, the people that are going to broadcast them.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so that's another one. Those two are doing it somewhat simultaneously. It sounds like DJ Sanders, young man out of Belleville, we think is early July, at least at this point. Is that correct?
Yeah, early, mid-July, yep.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I'm just looking at all the lists that you and I and CJ went over yesterday, and Dorian Brew, we don't know yet. Dijon Lee, at the corner out of Southern California, expected to go to Alabama, we think, on June 28th. That would be another one. So hopefully that's enough, guys. it's been like a major lead up to Jerry's point. It has been a long time coming, but all the dominoes are falling right now. All right, before we move to our next topic, which is going to be a little Longhorn baseball discussion, given David Pierce's departure yesterday and now where Texas goes, I want to say thank you to our sponsor. That's Texas Electricity Ratings. For those of y'all still living in Texas and in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find a good electricity plan that fits your needs. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, especially during the heat of the summer here, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all your electricity needs. Thanks and hook 'em from the fellas at TexasElectricityRatings.com.
And as you said, Bobby, yesterday, the news was announced that Texas fires head baseball coach, David Pierce, which you know, we talked about coming for the last few weeks, especially if you remember over on TexasFootball.com. So that announcement was made official yesterday morning, I guess you could say. And now the big question is, where do things go from here? And we've had a spirited discussion over on TexasFootball.com, hearing two candidates. And I still continue to hear two candidates, despite what may or may not have been said yesterday after a win or loss in the College World Series.
Who are those two candidates, Blake?
Let's get one thing out of the way. If this is done, whoever it is, it's done. Contracts are signed. This is done. Now it's just when it's going to be announced.
Yeah. And so it's Sloth and Vitello are the two names that we continue to hear. The two names that have been consistent throughout this whole thing. And I know that after the game yesterday, he was asked, and I'm trying to find that clip. I should have had it ready. That's my fault there. If he is going to be the next coach of Texas. And he said he gave up a big part of his life to come take this job, and he poured every ounce of his soul into that job and had a somewhat emotional answer. But, guys, how many times have we heard coaches say, I'm not going to be the next coach at XYZ?
What else can you say? Like, what else can you say in that scenario? I mean, that's like somebody – I mean, you got to ask the question, right? I understand the question being asked because that's their job, right? That's our job. But – I mean, like, what else can a guy say in that scenario, Bobby? I mean, he's got a team in the locker room, and they just lost the national title by one run to a cheering Rick Barnes and Peyton Manning.
You know, Jerry, I wrote this to somebody last night, and I truly believe it based on what Schlossnagel said in the postgame. I felt like he was a competitive dude pissed off that he lost.
Yeah.
And having to deal with it in 30 minutes after having lost that game, said that he gave everything in his power to be the best he could be at Texas A&M, et cetera, and into that team and into that program. Had not wanted to talk about anything other than that. So I felt like it was just a guy that was pissed off that he lost. That's it's not so much how he said it or what it's not so much what he said. Just that's how I took that. Think about it. You just came within one run of winning the national championship. I think I'd want to be throwing chairs at that point, you know, at least inside my head, I would be. And I think that's what he was doing. And then having to deal with some other stuff on the side. That being said, I'm just going to circle back to all of this for everybody is, I do think that Chris Del Conte most likely has the person that he wants ready to go. I don't know when that will be announced. Some people speculate Wednesday. I don't know that there's a time frame for this or an exact time frame scheduled yet. I do know that Texas is probably going to make someone the highest paid college baseball coach in the country. So that is what I'm being told. I'm not being told that, hey, this guy has it. At least not from official university sources. There's all kinds of rumors and some that are extremely substantiated that it would be either Schlossnagel or Vitello, one of the two. A lot of people lean towards Schlossnagel in that regard, but I think that whoever it will be, Texas will make them the highest paid baseball coach in the country. College baseball coach.
Yeah. To be fair. College. And a lot of people asking when it'll be done. I'm still hearing by the end of the week.
But yeah, Thursday makes a lot of sense.
Wednesday, I'd be surprised if it went to
Friday. Well, yeah, I mean, somebody's got to come celebrate the move to the SEC.
I want to say this, Jerry and Blake. The other thing that you know, he was – David Pierce was at Texas for 8 years and went to 3 College World Series. You know, he did not do a bad job. He just didn't do a job that was up to the standards of University of Texas baseball. Whoever this next coach will be, do you realize he will only be the 7th baseball coach that the University of Texas has had since 1910? 1910, only be the seventh coach. So that's part of the reason here is this, the, a lot of people, oh, well, they're, you know, this and that and others. Texas has such a rich baseball history. It's almost ridiculous. I mean, you had 20 plus years from Dish, Falk, Gustafson, right at that amount for Garrido. I mean, it's just tough sledding. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
So whoever it is, better be ready for the long haul and better be ready to perform. And I do think it's going to be a long-term deal, whoever gets this job, by the way. So yeah, I'm hearing a 10-year deal.
It's essentially a lifetime contract, and then they walk away.
Yeah. And we got a super chat regarding this from D Herring 5. Thank you, D Herring 5. He says, the coaching search really doesn't seem schlepped. Just hope the coach isn't a schlock compared to DP. I think he was a schlock. I think the team regressed and was going in the wrong direction there. Then one other one from Michael Schuler. Michael, thank you for the super chat. He says, blink twice if it's lost. Don't blink at all if it's lost.
Look, guys, if I could guarantee that, I've heard nothing I've heard nothing from someone in a position of authority at Texas to tell me it's Jim Schlossnagel. Okay. So I've heard nothing in that category. I've heard a lot of people outside that say that they are hearing, and people that are very well positioned that saying it very well could be. So I'm cautious on this until I hear it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. But I do believe that Texas is approaching at least one of those two coaches, if not both of them, at this point. And I think Chris Del Conte likely already has a taker, to Jerry's point. So,
The one thing I was told yesterday was, look, the thing was announced because the next guy's contract signed. Now we're just ready. We're waiting for the announcement. It's done. Now it's up to CDC and whoever that is to announce it.
And Kelly Horns Up says, which one do you prefer? One. I don't think you can go wrong. It's like a 1A, 1B type situation. So, okay, guys. Well, it looks like our special guest is here. Bobby, I'm going to bring him in and let you do the introduction.
Yeah, absolutely. Welcome to the show, Greg Tepper, the executive editor, managing editor, chief poobah. best way to put it, of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Greg, welcome to the show, and congratulations on another successful issue of the Bible for Texas football. How you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent. I appreciate that warm intro. And I'm going to make sure that I let my boss know that I was introduced is that way. Like next time, like I got like my review coming up here pretty soon. So I'm going to clip this and make sure that this is part of that review. So no, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's fun to talk a little football.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's fun talking with people that work on football all year long, like you and I do, Jerry, Blake as well. Let me ask you this. I mean, how to give people a sense of the amount of work that you guys put into this publication. I think that I want to start there, Greg, because I've done magazines before and it is a wholly different labor of love because, you know, whether it's typos or you know, making sure the page is laid out correctly. It's just a lot of work, but to give people a sense of what you guys and how much effort y'all put into this.
Yeah, you know, this is it. Really, labor of love is the way to put it. This is a magazine that we really start putting together in February and start talking about what we want on the cover and what we want the big things to be, you know, to be important in this magazine because it kind of demands that kind of work from a scale perspective and also just demands that kind of work from how much it matters to people. And the institution that it is in Texas. You know, this is a magazine that I get people come up to me and saying, you know, I was in it and my dad was in it and now my son is in it. And it's like, what other magazine, what other publication can you say that about? And so we got to take it, you know, super seriously and super importantly. And so we start that process in February. I will tell you that the shifting college football calendar and the additional movement across the state has made things a little bit more of a fire drill sometimes. You know, we're always keeping a close eye on transfers and last second things like that, because we want it to be as accurate as possible. There does come a point where the buzzer goes off and you just got to say, all right, well, that's what's going on in the magazine. But that is, it is a labor of love from a team that really, this is a passion project for them. And they all kind of understand the mission, which is just to reflect football and to cover it like nobody else does in the state, because this is a state that's so football crazy that, you know, the more football we have not found the bottom of the well to as far as like what this state will want as far as football coverage is concerned. And that's exciting for us. And it's also a challenge for us.
Hey, before we get going on questions about football, tell people where they can get the magazine, how they can get it, et cetera, if you don't mind, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to do it is go to texasfootball.com/subscribe. We'll mail it directly to you. Subscribers are getting theirs right now. One of the ways that we incentivize people to subscribe, also give away our entire business model, is that you get it before it hits newsstands. And so subscribers are getting it right now. It won't hit newsstands until after July 4th. So then you can go to Walmart, HEB, your local bookstore, et cetera, and it'll be there. But if you want it as quickly as possible, texasfootball.com/subscribe. And if you subscribe, you also get our streaming platform, where we have more than 600 live Texas high school football games in the fall. So if that's the kind of thing that piques your interest and you like, if you're a recruiting guy or something like that, or you just like high school football and you want to see what all the buzz is about, we've got the goods there on texanlive.com. So texasfootball.com/subscribe is the best way to get it.
All right, Greg, thanks for joining. So we're going to get right to the most important question ever from a fan. Here it is, Greg. What's your favorite high school football game of all time? Let's get that one out of the way right when we get started.
Sure, yeah. Like, yeah, I've had two sips of coffee. You guys are just hurling fastballs in my head. It's tough. There's a couple that I'll hold in high esteem. Obviously, I think people are going to think back to the first Duncanville North Shore game, 2018. Yes. That was the Hail Mary game. And I maintain about that game, this is my hot take on that game, is that if Demetrius Davis's last second throw sails out of the end zone and it falls incomplete and Duncanville wins, that is still an all-time game. Go back and watch that game from beginning to end. It is a war. It's absolutely fantastic. I think one of the things that gets lost because of that is that there was a game the year before with Manville and Highland Park, which came down to a wild comeback by Highland Park led by John Stephen Jones, coming all the way back and leading them to a state championship. Manville comes up 1 yard short of a state championship. That one's absolutely massive. The other one that I would go back to, And this is a personal thing for me. The game that actually immediately preceded the Hail Mary game gets lost, but it's Longview and Beaumont Westbrook. Mm-hmm. It's a 6A Division II game. Haynes King, the former Texas A&M, now Georgia Tech quarterback, led Longview to their first championship since the 30s. And that is, if anybody's ever been to Longview, America, there may be no more football crazy town in America than that, and the sea of green and gold that came there from East Texas, and then Beaumont Westbrook, you know, from the 409, to have two at the biggest classification, have two non major metro area teams playing for a 6A state championship at 3 o'clock on Saturday, enormous crowd. I maintain that Longview pounced on a fumble in the final minute to basically seal it. And or the final minutes to basically seal it. And I maintain that's the loudest that I've ever heard AT&T Stadium. And I've been to Cowboys games that they won. So like those are the ones that stick out. State championships, because the stakes are so high, are always going to be things that I hold in high regard.
And I want to add to that, I totally agree with Greg. And you also get the John King entertainment factor. because I'm just telling you, the most fun I've ever had at a high school football practice, and obviously you and Bobby know I've been to thousands of those things, is a John King football practice. I'm just here to tell you, he's pretty special.
We are fond of saying that he is the most John King man who ever lived. There is nobody who's ever been more John King than the Longview coach, and a guy who will let you know. Who will let you know if he thinks you ranked him too high or too low? He'll get in your text message.
And by the way, just because you're his son playing quarterback, that you don't.
Don't
get any free passes from John.
No, that might be worse.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to ask you, Greg. You know what went into the choice of the cover here?
Yeah,
Blake, if you don't mind putting that back up, the one on the left is the one I'm talking about most. Texas versus Texas A&M. I bet that wasn't probably a very long conversation, given that these two teams are renewing the rivalry this year after 13 years apart.
So it's interesting, you know, as far as the cover like process is concerned, that's one of the things we start talking about in February. It's like, okay, what's going to be on our covers? You know, we have the main cover and then we have the gatefold cover, which is usually reserved for high school. Main cover, you know, and the thing is, it's got to be it's important for us. And as managing editor, I've made sure of this. We go through the process, even if it feels obvious, we need to go through the process because the cover matters and it goes into the history books. Like this is something I've said before, it's now a dated reference, but like I'm envious of Sports Illustrated because if they put out a dud of a cover, they just get to do another one next week. We have to sit on it for a year. And more importantly, it goes into our history and people are always going to remember it. Like I'm looking at a shelf of all of our covers right now and I'm pointing out ones and I'm like, I don't know if I love that one, yeah. You know? So we got to make sure we get it right. Yeah. But after talking about it, there were a couple of conversations that came up. But Texas and A&M felt right. You know, we want ideally when you look across all of the covers of Dave Campbell's Texas football, you should be able to tell the story of football in the state of Texas and what the biggest story was heading into the season. And I don't think there's any doubt that Texas's move to the SEC and their reuniting with Texas A&M. And you know, renewing the rivalry that has long defined what the state is about, I think is the biggest story. And so we got Quinn Ewers and Connor Wegman together at actually the Texas High School Coaches Association offices in San Marcos. Did a cover shoot with them. This will disappoint maybe Longhorn fans and Aggie fans, but like they were cool with each other. Like I think the last time they saw each other was at they were talking about that. I think they were at the Elite 11 was the last time they saw each other. But like dapped up and were chatting and stuff like that. They were very, very polite and kind to one another. So there weren't any fists thrown. But it was cool to get those two guys in the same room to do this cover shoot and make sure that we kind of put another chapter in the history of this magazine and tell a story that we think is really important to the overall kind of story of football in the state of Texas. So yeah, it was especially with two quarterbacks that we think, you know, Connor Wegman before he got injured, we thought was really on the up and up and a guy who could be emerging as a star this year if he can stay healthy. And then Quinn Ewers obviously leading Texas to a college football playoff. It felt natural. And especially when you've got two premier players at homegrown Texas boys playing at Texas, playing at the mainstay institutions. It just felt super right.
Hey, Greg, you guys pick the high school. I want to talk a little high school football now with you. You guys try to pick and predict and who's going to win this one, who's going to win that one. Mm-hmm. Give us your top three or four high school programs and what you see them doing this year, whether it's the DeSotos or Duncanvilles or North Shores. Who are the teams that you're on the lookout for this year that you guys think are just going to be loaded for bear?
Yeah, you know, I think a conversation is probably going to start with DeSoto. You know, that was the team that pound for pound was the finest high school football team in Texas. And I don't pay attention all that much to what goes on outside of Texas, but I would put them up against any team in America. I thought what they were playing last year, and especially the 6A level, to be the pound for pound of the best team in Texas is remarkable. But they were unbelievable. They start the year number one in our 6A rankings, and I think for good reason. They're loaded. They bring back Tiger Ryden, their star running back. They have the best sophomore in America in Booby Feaster at the receiver spot. They are loaded for bear. They have to find a quarterback. I think DJ Bailey, who's now at Sam Houston, I think he did so much for them that kind of goes that people maybe didn't notice. It was so important to them. That's a big question. Duncanville, their district bunkmate, is going to be in that mix as well. We foresee another meeting between Duncanville and North Shore, two teams that are absolutely loaded and two great quarterbacks, right? You've got Keelan Russell, the outstanding quarterback, now the Alabama commit, and I believe the Elite 11 MVP. There for Duncanville, not to mention the playmakers that they've got around him, including DeCorian Moore. And then on the North Shore side, they've got Caleb Bailey, who is now a 4-year starter at a 6A school. Remember, as a freshman, he led North Shore to a state championship. So they are loaded, at the other classifications, the smart classifications, Aledo, rinse and repeat. They've won 11 titles in the last 15 years. So that seems pretty good. And then some other teams. I would keep an eye on a team like Gunner in the 3A ranks is a team that is establishing themselves as a dynasty. They're going for a three-peat. Carthage is going to be back for revenge after getting knocked off by their rival Gilmer, en route to Gilmer State Championship. But Gilmer and Gilmer versus Carthage is going to be must see. I mean, the great thing about high school football, and then Port Neches Groves and South Oak Cliff look like they're heading for another collision course. That in 5A, that's what's great about high school football is that there's such a breadth to it that, like, even if you just want to, if you want to ignore 6A altogether, you have still way too much football to consume, which makes this fun, and it makes coming to work every day really exciting.
Let me ask you this, Greg, because a majority of those teams you just mentioned, mm-hmm. Houston, Dallas, mm-hmm. East Texas. What about Central Texas, West Texas? Yeah. Those teams, anybody in those areas to look out for?
Yeah, great question. You know, in the Central Texas area, as far as the big schools are concerned, you know, one of the teams that's really been rising of late, a little bit off the beaten path, but Killeen Harker Heights out of the Killeen area, you know, I think because of the way that Killeen is built, it's an army base, if you didn't know, they tend to have kind of ebbs and flows, but the way that Harker Heights and the program they've built over the last 5 years is certainly a team at the big school level to keep an eye on. Where you really get into the depth in Central Texas is Central and East Texas, or West Texas rather, is going to be in the small schools. So MART is another team that has been absolutely fantastic year in, year out. They've made it to the state championship game umpteen consecutive years at this point. Kevin Hoffman does an unbelievable job with the Panthers. There are a number of big time schools. Waco La Vega, actually the alma mater of Dave Campbell, always in the mix as well. There are, as far as West Texas is concerned, again, you generally have to look smaller. The best big schools are probably a team like Midland Legacy, formerly Midland Lee. Odessa Permian, I think, has an opportunity to really take a step under Coach Jeff Ellison. They're going to be a fun to watch. San Angelo Central, the little Southwest Conference, District 2-6A, is really where you make your hay. I'm into Abilene as well. I think the Gold Eagles could make a real run. But then you get into the small school ranks, and that's really where they have the depth and really where they've dominated of late. Albany at the 2A Division II level is looking for a three-peat with their legendary coach, Denny Faith. They've got teams all over the place in West Texas that really, I think, have an opportunity to make a deep run. Canadian up in the panhandle is a perennial power that's made a state semifinal, I want to say, in like 8 of the last 9 years or something. So that's really where you make your hay is in the small school ranks in the Central Texas and the West Texas areas.
Hey, so Greg, I have a question for you because mm-hmm. you're in a unique position that you're doing TV a lot of the post game, right? After the state championship games, but you're on the field for the games.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that, because obviously people know I'm a coach's kid. I love being ball boy and being on the field, playoff games, all that. But you're there in Texas, Dallas Cowboys Stadium, and there's 50,000 people around, but you're on the field taking it all in. What's that like to take it all in, not from the stands, but from your perspective?
Yeah, it's loud. The biggest thing I would say. This is true. In the past couple of years, I've really had to be mindful of my voice. It's 4 straight days of football, right, and I'm on the air a lot. And so there have been times, there's a really hilarious episode of High School Scoreboard Live in 2021 where I am basically a mute the entire episode. Still paid me the entire rate. So thank you very much, Valley Sports Southwest. All that's to say, you really get down there. And what I love about being on the field for those state championship games is that obviously you can feel the energy from the crowd, and you can feel it get bigger and bigger and louder. But more than that, I think you can feel the energy on the sideline. And it's a different kind of energy. Obviously, there's a lot of excitement, but especially for teams that haven't been there in a while or have never been there before, there is a nervous energy, and there is a like understanding of the stakes here. And we talk about this, about how when you make it to a state championship game, it is a 48-minute game. The rules are the same. Nothing else changes. There's some TV timeouts here and there, but that's basically it. But being in that stadium and understanding like you're representing and having the entire community behind you, and you know, with an opportunity to etch your name in Texas high school football history, like, one of the questions we always have when we're going to these state championship games, we're analyzing, is like, okay, who can handle the moment? Like, who can handle this atmosphere and that, because it is so unique and it's so different. And I've told people, I'll say it again, even if you don't like Texas high school football, even if you're not a high school football fan, I would say even if you're not a football fan, although why are you watching the show? Yeah. I would say you should go to the state championship games in Arlington if you have the means, simply because that should be a sports bucket list thing for you. It is a singular event that it's the cheapest you're ever getting to that place. And then also you get to experience something that is such a cultural phenomenon in Texas. And it is all just like distilled down there between like the teams and the bands and the cheerleaders and the fans and just everything going on. It is a super, super, like it is Friday Night Lights distilled. And if that is appealing to you, even in the least, like you absolutely should go to the state championship games in December.
I've kind of equated it to, if those 4 days, like you said, is the closest thing to the NCAA basketball tournament football fans can feel, because yeah, it's the majority of these kids' football careers is over. And there's a lot of uncontrollable emotion that mm-hmm. goes with that, and with the parents and the fans in the stands, as you mentioned. Then you have the underdog, right? The favorite. Is he going to lose mm-hmm. to the underdog? Mm-hmm. All these ebbs and flows of momentum over a 3-4 day period. It's the closest thing you can feel in person to the NCAA tournament in basketball if you don't go to that. It's rare that you can put something together that rivals that on a high school football level, but y'all have done it.
I entirely agree. It's the intensity level. It's the intensity yeah. level and like the stakes there. And again, it starts on Wednesday. They will paint lines on the field and play six-man football at AT&T Stadium. And there will be crowds. And I've been tracking this. Since they've moved to AT&T Stadium, the crowds at those six-man teams, every game has been larger than the combined populations of the towns. Yeah. So like, I want you to just consider what that means. Like literally more than these kids have ever played in front of. I mean, these kids were playing, I mean this respectfully, these kids were playing next to a cow pasture in their state semifinal, and now they're playing where Dak Prescott plays. And it is so wild to see. Like I love being on the field when they walk out for the first time, because like it really is. It's like they walk into a spaceship. They're like, okay, like what? It's such a spectacular event, and I totally agree with you. The intensity and the majesty emotion of that event. Yeah, yeah. The emotions. It's unbelievable.
All right, that's going to be Greg Tepper. Greg, thank you so much. Again, give people a note about where they can get the magazine. I think that's really important. Yeah. And I want to say this before we let you go. Thank you for carrying the torch. Appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot to me. You know, Dave Campbell passed away back in 2021, and I tell people all the time, I don't actually care if you like the magazine as long as one guy upstairs likes the magazine. You know, we're just trying to do right by him. But TexasFootball.com/subscribe is where you can get the 2024 summer edition of Dave Campbell's Texas Football mail to you before it's newsstands. If you want to wait for newsstands, it'll be there. Call it July 4th weekend.
Got it. Great. Thank you, Dave. Greg. Very much.
Don't call me Dave. Like you gave me the nice compliment earlier. I can't take, hey, he called me Dave, back to my boss.
Good stuff, Greg. You have a good one, buddy. Thank you for joining us.
Take care, guys.
All right. We need to get to a commercial break here for a second, and I'm going to read that if y'all don't mind right now. Our friends over at Babbel, the best way to learn a new language, immersion, of course. Go live somewhere where the language is spoken and use it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off that list with Babbel. I tell you what, guys, I've been actually working on the Spanish one because I actually want to improve some communication, et cetera. It's been very helpful. They do it in 5, 10, or 15-minute increments, and I've been using the 5-minute ones whenever I have free time, and instead of looking at Twitter, I'm actually learning a little something, so it's very helpful to me. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners. Go to babbel.com/ontexas Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/onTexas, spelled Babbel, BABBEL.com/onTexas. Rules and restrictions may apply, but I've been doing this now for a little over a week, and I'm getting better.
Is West Texas and East Texas two different languages in that as well? Do we have Texas separated into like three different languages as well?
What is Louisiana separated into?
We need to get Ed Orgeron on the show.
All right, guys. And while we're at it, we're going to give you a twofer here. Jerry, I'm going to go ahead and just let you tell folks out there about Manscaped.
Look, it's getting bad up in here. It's time to look downstairs. It's smooth sex summer. Are you ready for smooth sex summer? Ladies plus gentlemen, it's my pleasure to announce that smooth sex summer is officially upon us. When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you're groomed from those pubes to bum. Thanks to our friends at Manscaped, you make this season your smoothest yet. The Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, here it is the ultimate bundle to keep your boys downstairs cool while looking hot. Join the 10 million men plus worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer to get 20% off plus free shipping when you go to manscaped.com and use code ONTEXAS, all caps. Summertime and the trimming is easy. And you know I'm not ending this read without... Now that you've have the perfect haircut, you have to use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. It's the Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafing ball deodorant. Once you touch your sack, you'll never go back Bobby Burton and Blake Monroe.
I give up. Jerry Hamilton, I give up, buddy.
Oh, man. All right, guys. Well, we just had Greg Tepper on, managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. And thanks to Matthew, I had him make us a couple of graphics where they talked about the Longhorns here. And I'm going to bring that up. We're going to start with the offense. And they rated the offense in different ways. They got quarterbacks as an A, running backs as a B+, wide receivers as an A, and offensive line as an A+. Then they listed a couple of breakout candidates, Jonte Cook, Jaden Blue, Juan Davis, and DeAndre Moore. Curious to get y'all's thoughts on Dave Campbell's grading of the Longhorns and their potential breakout candidates.
I agree with Jonte Cook to a level. I agree with Jaden Blue. I don't know about Juan Davis. I don't know that I would have put him in the same category as the others, although I do think he's going to be called upon more this year. DeAndre Moore is an interesting one, Jerry. You and I listened to an interview yesterday Steve Sarkisian gave to Greg McElroy. Greg will have on the program here this week as well, by the way. But you and I talked about it. One of the things that Sark had to say was he actually went out there with DeAndre Moore as one of the guys he thought was going to be a really good player this year. So I actually like that portion of what they had to say. As far as the grades themselves, I don't have any problems with those. I think the wide receivers right now are an A- until proven otherwise, maybe a B+, alongside the running backs, but certainly have the ability to be an A.
Yeah, I agree. I think right now I like B+ for them as well headed into the season, because again, you know, Cedric Baxter is going to make a jump from year one to year two in college football. Just follow the math historically on these guys that are really good backs. But, you know, if he has a healthy season, he had the nick injuries, those injuries that just kind of linger last year. As Rod says, he got a little more armor on him now this year. A healthy season for Cedric Baxter and an ascending season in year two. And Jaden Blue is getting his first games of 15-plus touches in a game. If those things come together, Trey Weiser is going to be tremendous in his role. You're going to see more pony package two backs this year, which I think is going to elevate running backs as well statistically through the passing game more so than even before. I think you're going to see that group maybe ascend a little. I think offensive line starts at A+. That's going to be totally dependent, in my estimation, on two things. Right side pass pro, DJ Campbell year two, Cam Williams first year started. How are they going to tango work together in pass pro? And then Hayden Connor, left guard, moving people in the run game in the red zone. If both those things come through, I think Texas will play to that level on the offensive line.
Then let's look at their defense here. They also graded the defense. They gave the defensive line an A, the linebackers a B, defensive back an A, and special teams an A. And their breakout candidates are Norton, Cole, LaFau, and Lowell. I'll probably butcher that, but
he's a good thing about Jermaine Lowell's. He's used to his name being butchered, so nothing surprises. he's been called Lowell, Lole, you just name it. And on this show by all of us, I think the linebackers is pretty accurate. Bobby, I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I think Anthony Hill's an A-plus type of player, but I do think that youth, losing Jalen Ford, right? That youth, another year in the program for Maurice Blackwell. How's that position going to come together? David Benda, obviously back for another year. They have enough pieces there. I do think they start at that B level and have to play their way up a little bit. Special teams as an A is interesting. I'd probably go B plus to A minus there because punter's unproven and you lost great gunners. Great gunners.
Two of them. Both of them.
Two of them. Now, I think you have the best hair kicking a football back. I think you have really good the reason special teams will be fine is because the level of talent Texas continues to bring into the program. It's just kind of putting those pieces together. But I think punters got to come through this year for that to end up being an A. I do think they have maybe even better in the return game than last year, Bobby.
Yeah, I think they will be better in the return game. I actually do, even though, I mean, frankly, look, I mean, Xavier Worthy's a tremendous punt returner, guys. Tremendous. Yeah. Keelan Robinson is going to have a chance to be a kick returner in the NFL. They may have better kick returner in Matthew Golden.
Yep.
I don't know that they'll – even as good as Silas Bolden is, I don't know that he'll be a better punt returner than Xavier Worthy, but certainly on the same category. The real key piece, you could talk about gunners and all this other stuff, it's going to be at the punter position.
Yeah.
Ryan Sanborn was really, really good last year.
Yes.
Really good. Very – and one of the things when I say good, and he was reliable. Like, how many shanks did he have all year in any kind of serious situation? One, maybe?
Yeah.
It's 0 to 1 is the answer. And so I feel like that's going to be a big question mark for me. As far as an A to the defensive line, Bill Norton, Jermaine Lole added to Tia Savea, added to Alfred Collins. You know, we need to talk about that in a second because Sark really went off about how he thinks Alfred Collins has a chance to kind of mature into something different with his interview earlier today or earlier yesterday. But my thought on the whole B grade for the linebackers, you know, I'm not worried. A minus for defensive line to B plus until they show me there's a war daddy in there. That's what I don't know yet. Maybe Trey Moore becomes that. Maybe somebody else does. But I don't know that Texas has a defensive lineman that you're going to sit here and say, oh boy, we got to go up against him. Last year they had two of them. So that's a question. At linebacker, I actually do think that Anthony Hill can be that guy. But I also think that he's learning a new position of sorts, and it's an instinctive one. And so there's going to be a time frame, an acclimation period, so to speak. The secondary with an A, a lot of people want to beat up the Texas secondary right now, and I'm actually okay with that as long as they exceed expectations on the field this year, right? So it's you know, those grades are okay. I don't have anything real. Like, I'm not going to sit there and argue with them. I would nitpick them a little bit, maybe.
All right. And thank you to Matthew for making those. Hey, we got a couple of super chats I want to knock out real quick as their comments more than anything. Our buddy Jack here. Thank you, Jack, as always. He says, hola, Bobby. ¿Cómo está?
¿Qué tal, Jack? ¿Qué tal? I'm learning the Babbel stuff, by the way, is really cool because you actually get into conversational stuff like ¿cómo está usted? That kind of stuff. Whether you're talking, I don't want to get into it. Nobody wants to hear my Spanglish. It's bad enough as it is, but I'm trying.
And then Trace Little with the Super Chat heard that CDC was thinking of Tom Herman as the new baseball coach. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well,
Jerry, no comment.
Jerry just needs to stay quiet on that one, I think. Stay quiet and smile, Jerry.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, by the way, I want to bring this one up because we were just talking about it, and Sark talked about this. This is a good lead in, Bobby. Bobby's losing his hat like the Tennessee pitcher last night. The edge rushers bring turnovers, and I want to bring that's a good kind of lead into the interview Greg McElroy had with Steve Sarkisian yesterday, Bobby, that I do think there's an upbeat by the Texas staff and Austin defensively because I think they feel like Trey Moore, Colin Simmons, older guys at edge to continued growth from Ethan Burr is going to bring a lot more pass rush. And I think Johnny Nansen, maybe what he's going to bring to the defense combined with that's going to bring much more pass rush. And then that is going to create better situations for the secondary, get quarterbacks to the ground more, and possibly create more turnovers. I think Sark sounded very upbeat on that yesterday. For those that watched that interview, haven't seen it.
Yeah, Greg McElroy runs a podcast called Always College Football. He interviews different guys, talks a little college football. Greg's a good guy. We're actually going to talk to him and interview him here in the week ahead. Jerry, the one thing that you mentioned that, a couple things else that Sark said in that interview that grabbed me.
Yeah.
Most talented and deepest secondary we've had since we've been here.
I agree with that.
Okay, that's what Sark said. He said that he also thought that, and this is conventional thought, or conventional wisdom as well, that because of that outside pass rush, we should be able to, quote, help them more than we have in the past. So that's a trope that I think may actually a common fan has had that actually may come true, right? So that's a good thing. The other thing that he really said that I thought was interesting about the secondary, he made a point to really hand out some accolades to Jalen Gilbo.
Yeah.
And he is an often forgot about guy when we start going down because he's behind Jahdae Barron, right, at nickel. Just keep that in mind. I mean, a coach doesn't do that and say it the way Sark did,
right,
unless there's a little oomph in there, right? Yep. I mean, you've heard enough and done enough of those interviews as well. The other one I thought was very interesting. You know, he compared Matthew Golden to Jordan Whittington.
Yeah.
Smart, tough, versatile team.
Yeah.
That is an interesting comparison for a guy. Matthew Golden compared him to Jordan Whittington. Said that Silas Bolden, by the way, had something like 22 or 23 TDs in his time at Oregon State. So,
The other thing that was interesting was Sark made a point to say, as Rod calls it, they're expanding the receiver circle of trust in games. I'm using Rod's term. Because of the longer season Texas is planning on and hoping to have and having to and playing more and having more of a rotation at the wide receiver position. Now, does that mean at Michigan in the second half? No. Does that mean Colorado State, ULM, UTSA, Mississippi State? I think absolutely yes. But I thought that was interesting that Sark made a point of that. And also, we always have to remember there's always a recruiting piece to interviews and what people may be trying to hit against Sark on in recruiting.
Yeah. It started off, please take a look at it. It's interesting if you like hearing from Steve Sarkisian himself. The other thing he talked about was a top-heavy roster that a lot of teams have in smaller conferences. And that was one of the things that he really needed to build out when he got to Texas, which I thought was interesting. So he wants to be two or three deep at Texas, not just one deep with a top-heavy roster. And frankly, that's accurate. That's how Georgia became Georgia. You know, they didn't do it with one deep players. They did it with three deep, two deep. You know, so good stuff from Steve Sarkisian and Greg McElroy there as well.
Okay, guys, we got time for some questions here, so let's jump over to those. And actually, I want to read this comment from Bob P. first. He says, He says, I really feel with Sark and the growth of the players and program, we have a national title in our near future. That was his takeaway from the interview with Greg McElroy.
I would say competing for one for sure. I think it's going to be harder than ever to win one. Not that you can't, but it's a different day and age coming in college football as far as hoisting the trophy. But I do think the program is being built to contend.
And then Living Rent Free in UT with a comment says, Flood is recruiting behemoth for the offensive line. I can only see Georgia having more talent and depth at this time.
You know, I actually think after this class, I actually agree with that one. I think that's a really good comment. I mean, you know, look, I think Georgia, we'll see what Alabama does. I think they've fallen off on the offensive line in the last couple of years and at wide receiver there. As far in terms of high school evaluations at the end of Nick's time, not on Nick. I mean, just he had so much coaching turnover come through there. And anytime you get over 70, recruiting is affected or right around that number. Just look historically at college football. But I do think Georgia has that for sure. And I think it's going to be so interesting because actually some people would argue that if Ohio State has a weakness this year, that's going to be it for them. I'm interested to see what Michigan does moving forward on offensive line with Shroe Moore, because they had I know Washington got the award, but I thought Michigan had the best O-line last year. And they when Texas goes up there this year, realize this. They lost every starter off of last year, but if you look, they're all juniors and seniors behind them. All these guys that are starting, that are going to start against Texas, are seniors, redshirt juniors. So I think Michigan's in that conversation. I think Georgia, obviously. I think Texas is finishing off this recruiting class is going to be right there in that conversation for the next 3-4 years. I am interested to see how Michigan does. Sharone Moore being a head coach, not is a different job there, is that far as that goes.
And then the only thing I would say, and just to circle back, and we need to mention this, is that Texas and how they're building the offensive line, Jerry. I think that Kyle Flood was the architect of some of those offensive lines at Alabama, and now he's at Texas. And I think he's doing the same darn exact thing he did at Alabama. So I love where Texas sits on the offensive front. I really do. John Mills, the latest commitment, obviously committed last night, young man out of San Francisco, goes 6'5 and a half, 6'6, 320 pounds. I said this stat earlier, guys, but Texas now has 4 offensive line commitments in the class of 2025. The average is 6'5, 330 pounds.
Yeah.
The average. That's just amazing to me.
And that leads to a good question Gus Flinger had at the beginning of this that I started. What position group has had the biggest recruiting improvement since Sark has taken over? You can make offensive line, QB. Bobby's going to go with quarterback, I think. Offensive line, I think. So the 3 I have pegged are offensive line, edge position with the most recent additions, and then quarterback are the 3 for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, look.
And one is speed overall in the program, but keep going.
Yeah, Sark recruits quarterbacks differently. That's an easy one. The position group as a whole is a no-brainer. I mean, that's offensive line. I mean, that's just a different element. No offense to anybody previously who recruited the offensive line at Texas for the last 15 years.
Or didn't recruit. Yeah.
I mean, they got out-recruited is what happened for 15 years. And that doesn't mean Texas didn't have some good players in there. I mean, I'm not trying to – but the coaches at Texas on the offensive line – period, woefully underperformed for a decade and a half. Period, full stop. And yeah. So as much as we point to what Tom Herman did or what Charlie Strong was unable to do or what Mac Brown in his last years, there's no position. And we argue all the time about what Mac Brown did at quarterback late in his career too. No. Offensive line was just a travesty. I mean, the problem with that too, Jerry, is that's basic football.
Well, the problem that's
what gets me off about that is the offensive line is where every head coach should know the offense starts with, and to not go and not be good at the offensive line at Texas is just ridiculous.
Well, and the problem with that at Texas, Bobby, is the state may be hit or miss on interior D linemen every year or true linebackers every year. The state rarely has a down year on the offensive line.
Right.
And I mean, you can date all the way back to your point, what an offensive line coach going, and trust me, guys, this is a true story. I was there about a week later, an offensive line coach going to Elkins watching. And the first thing he asks is, Jake Matthews is a little stiff, isn't he? I mean, Jake Matthews was doing the splits the day I was there in warmups. And his dad, by the way, Bruce Matthews, was on the Elkins staff as the video guy at the time. I mean, bad recruiting, to your point, bad evaluations. I mean, what fell apart on the offensive line really was major, because A&M had 4 first-round picks in the same recruiting class on the offensive line. 4. That the state produces offensive linemen by the numbers. There's no excuse not to be going on the offensive line at Texas or Texas A&M.
Pissed me off. No other position. I mean, quarterback was just a calamity of errors. I mean, it was just one after the other.
Right.
Offensive line, there's just no freaking excuse.
I want to reset John Mills, like you said, since we're on that. Was John Mills playing center or guard? I think the center in this class is Devin Coleman as a center guard. I think John Mills is a right tackle or guard. I think he could be a road grader, really big-time guard. But I'm telling you, he actually has a chance at right tackle because he's got foot and body quickness and reactive quickness, more so than some other guys. He's got a chance there. How it plays out, we'll have to see, right? Somebody asked if John Mills was one of the 6 highs. He indeed was. I'm going down the list of that was what there. I think there's one more than 4 out there right now. We'll see if all of them happen. Zane Petty asked, what are our chances with Myron Charles? I think Texas is right there with Myron Charles. Am I saying they're going to beat FSU? I'm not saying that, but I think they're right there. I think Texas has had some really good communication returns continuing from Sharma and Meyer Charles since that June 7th through 9th official visit weekend. Those guys, when you start communicating more after the visit than you were before, and even though the communication was good, that's a positive sign that you're really staying in the game, and that's continued with both those guys. And I'm not just talking about the player. I'm talking about the circle, the family, immediate family, and all that.
Hey, Jerry, let's take that one for a second, because a lot of people asked us about yesterday. You and I did a video about the defensive tackle recruiting as a whole and had a lot of questions as a base of that. Look, we're not saying Texas is going to have a bad defensive tackle recruiting class. We're saying we don't know what it's going to look like yet. And so, therefore, until that transpires, we'll have to see. Now, Sharma coming out saying he's making a decision by Friday, we may get to know a little bit more sooner rather than later. You're saying that Myron Charles has kept up his communication with Texas, whereas Florida State just got another defensive tackle that Texas was in on, Kevin Wynn. Maybe that portends well for Texas. You start adding those together, and then you have the opportunity to keep Brandon Brown, perhaps. Then you're looking at an elite defensive line class. So that's the problem right now that people that we're trying to describe to people. They have a low floor right now because they have no defensive lineman committed, and they have a high ceiling. That's what we're saying right now. Low floor, high ceiling. We don't know what defensive line recruiting is on the interior is going to look like for sure. That's why we cover it.
But here's the part of this too is these are all national battles. I mean, Josiah Sharma is Alabama, Oregon, Texas. Myron Charles is all Florida schools, but really FSU and Texas. Kid from Port Charlotte. Go ahead and check off your bingo card that Texas hasn't signed somebody from Port Charlotte if that happens, right? Brandon Brown is in Melbourne, E-Galley High School. Texas has never won a recruitment, and E-Galley recruited this much in Florida. And that is a national recruitment. I mean, you're talking about LSU, Tennessee, Texas, and Oklahoma, and hey, Miami was still calling last night. I mean, I'm not sure Miami knows there's a dead period, by the way, coming up, but based on what I was told, but or maybe they don't care. But, you know, look, I mean, these are all national recruitments for guys in California and in Florida. It's to me, it's about shots on goal is how you win consistently on these battles. Texas in this class, because I think Kenny Baker got a lot late start coming in from the NFL. And watch the 26 guys. There will be more guys on campus for games this year, more guys for official visits more than likely. They got a later start on the 25 cycle. So the problem is for Texas in this class, and I know it's what causes the angst with Texas fans, is you have to have a high win percentage on your shots on goal in this class. But let's just remember this too. Sark recruits through the whistle. And that's something that never needs to be forgotten here. And you only have to look at the 2022 offensive line class. You only have to look at last year's recruiting class as a whole.
And I mean, secondary in particular.
Secondary in particular. But, I mean, last year's recruiting class, that top five level recruiting class, Brandon Baker, Kobe Black, Ryan Wingo, Phil Simi, Ty Anthony Smith, Wardell Mack, Aaron Butler. None of those guys were committed to Texas when the ball was kicked to start the season.
All right, guys, we got time for just another question maybe. But before we get to that question, Bobby, can you tell folks out there about the good people at Texas Electricity Ratings?
Yeah, guys, if for anyone shopping for electricity in the deregulated areas of Texas, TexasElectricityRatings.com is the best place to start. You can find a great electricity plan for your household. It filters out the dangerous and gimmicky plans from providers that are all hat and no cattle when it comes to your monthly bill. You can shop by rate, but also by an average bill feature that actually takes into account seasonal usage to give you a real number and not just some placeholder. So if you're looking for a new electricity plan, check out TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for the best options available. Hook 'em. We appreciate you guys for sponsoring every Tuesday mornings, Coffee and Football, very much. Thank you.
Okay, for our last question here, we're going to read this one from Kyle. He said, I heard Sark tell a story with Joel Klatt that on a 4th-and-1, Jay Witt told Blue to get behind me. Who will be the guy to step up this year? Who's going to fulfill that Jordan Whittington role, guys, as far as a leadership and a clutch?
Well, Silas Bolden's going to try to say that, but I think guys are going to look at him and say, what? But Silas is going to say, oh, just come follow me. And they're going to be like, you? But Silas Bolden has that same type of a want to, I'll tell you that. I think that's a great question, Bobby. I think Matthew Golden has that in him. I think Sark is kind of making that clear in that interview with Greg McElroy. But I do think there's a little bit of a question to be answered there.
Yeah, I don't know that there is a person right now. And that is going to be this is what I'm trying to say about putting all the pieces together for a football team, especially at receiver, because y'all were talking clearly about receiver. You're asking me who do I think they should run behind? I think they should run behind Kelvin Banks. you know, but I think you're talking about on outside screen type thing with a receiver running back combo. Mike, that's part of the issue, right, Jerry, is where do all these pieces fit? And what matters on key downs. I don't know that they have a Jordan Whittington as a blocker. He was a rare guy, right? Just like Xavier Worthy's speed and quickness was rare. Adonai Mitchell's quickness and athleticism was rare for his size, along with his catch radius. So that's where I come out on right now. I don't know how all of these pieces at receiver are going to fit together. I just don't.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. We want to thank them for sponsoring today's show along with Babbel and Manscaped. Thank you all for the great questions. We need to thank Greg Tepper for coming on and talking football and high school football with us. Be sure to head on over to ontexasfootball.com. If you haven't already, you can use that promo code OTFOG. You get a full year for $39.95. I mean, you can't beat that deal, guys. There's no way around it. $39.95 using promo code OTFOG. and you'll get to see what Bobby, CJ, Jerry, and everybody else is saying over there. There's always great discussion nonetheless, not to mention all the news that they constantly bring, because we can't be live on here 24/7. But we do thank you for tuning in, so please hit that like and subscribe button if you haven't already, and then ring the bell so you're notified anytime that we post a video or go live. And for all those coming in late asking about baseball, we talked about it at the beginning of the show. I'll continue to update over on ontexasfootball.com as well. And then if anything breaks, I'm sure we'll jump on and talk about it.
Hey, Blake, I did have two things on baseball. We're waiting for you, those that want to know, we're waiting on Chris Del Conte to tell us really which directions he's going to go. We believe it will be one of the two coaches from last night. That's what we're hearing, what we think. Will it be Schlossnagel at A&M and break some Aggies' hearts? I think that that's very possible, apparently. But we do not know for sure quite yet. The timing of that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is what we're looking at. I will also add this, guys. Yesterday, the Longhorns added another person to the football staff. We forgot to mention that this morning. Bill Reese, longtime recruiting coordinator at UCLA, literally 15 years at UCLA as a recruiting coordinator. Then he went and spent 20 years in NFL personnel offices, was the director of player personnel for several different teams, head of scouting, et cetera. Steve Sarkisian hired him last week, we believe, to be part of the scouting department at the University of Texas. So that was a hire. Bill Reese, R-E-E-S. He is the father of former Alabama and Notre Dame offensive coordinator Tommy Reese. So sorry we didn't get to talk about that much this morning.
My parting shot is thanks to everybody for the congrats on hitting 52,000. You guys are awesome. Thanks for continuing to pass the word. We look forward to celebrating the SEC with you guys on Sunday. UT boy, I see you in here checking in late. Good to see you. Thanks to everybody. Enjoy the conversation every day and on texasfootball.com. So thank you. Somebody's asked, is Kyle Flood on the field during the games? Absolutely. But we'll talk about that tomorrow.
All right. So with that said, we'll be back same time, same place tomorrow morning. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you then.
Hook up.